Motivating Learning, the Self-Determination Theory. The self-determination theory involves investigating people's inherent growth tendencies, innate psychological needs that form their self-motivation and personality integration, as well as the conditions that foster those positive processes. There are three psychological needs which are essential for optimal functioning for growth, integration, social development, and personal well-being. They are competence, which is to set an appropriate level of expectations, relatedness, the need to feel belongingness and being connected to others, and autonomy, which refers to not being independent, detached, selfish, but rather to the feeling of using one's will that can accompany any act. A basic need, whether it be psychological or physical, is an energizing state that, if satisfied, conduces toward health and well-being, but if not satisfied, contributes to pathology and ill-being. The self-determination theory is concerned with positive developmental tendencies, but also the environments that are antagonistic toward those tendencies. Therefore, for an individual to experience an ongoing sense of integrity and well-being, then the basic needs of competence, relatedness, and autonomy must be satisfied. The self-determination theory looks at a differentiated approach to motivation, and so asks at any given time what kind of motivation is being shown. When looking at the continuum of motivation, it goes from amotivation to extrinsic motivation, which can be subdivided into categories based on the regulation of that motivation, followed by intrinsic motivation. Intrinsic motivation is doing an activity for the inherent satisfaction of the activity itself. Humans by nature have these motivational tendencies, but supportive conditions are necessary. Through research, it has been shown that optimal challenges, affectance promoting feedback, and freedom from demeaning evaluations all facilitate intrinsic motivation, and that autonomy is key in promoting competence. For example, people must not only experience competence or efficacy, they must also experience their behavior as self-determined for intrinsic motivation to be in evidence. Most of the research on effects of environmental events and intrinsic motivation focuses on autonomy versus control. When working with residents, threats, directives, pressured evaluations will diminish their intrinsic motivation versus choice. Acknowledgement of their feelings or opportunities for self-direction will enhance the intrinsic motivation as they allow people a greater feeling of autonomy. One study showed that students taught with a more controlling approach lost initiative and also learned less effectively. Relatedness also comes into play when looking at studies which showed children, when working on a task in the presence of an adult who ignored them, had a low level of intrinsic motivation, and also studies observed lower motivation in students who saw their teachers as cold or uncaring. This is important as a teacher, as we want our learners to become their best self, and we should be encouraging and caring. If we as teachers act like we don't care, then why should the learner care? Also, sadly, as teachers, we could negatively impact this wonderful learner who has a ton of intrinsic motivation. It is important to remember people will only be intrinsically motivated for activities that hold intrinsic interest for them. If not intrinsically motivated, then we need to look at the factors for extrinsic motivation, so the performance of an activity to attain some separable outcomes. So how do people carry out activities when they aren't interested in them? This is done by what is called internalization, or taking in a value regulation, and then integration, the transformation of the regulation into their own. The self-determination theory proposes that extrinsic motivation can vary in its relative autonomy. For example, a child who is doing homework as a means to an end, such as getting into a good college, versus a child who is doing homework purely to appease their parents. The former example involves a feeling of choice, versus the latter involves compliance with an external regulation. Extrinsically motivated behaviors can be subdivided into four categories. First is externally regulated. It is the least autonomous, it's done to satisfy an external demand or reward contingency, and it is typically seen as very controlling. Second is introjected regulation. It's taking in a regulation, but you don't fully accept it as your own. It's done to avoid guilt or anxiety or to attain ego enhancements such as pride, or done in order to maintain feelings of self-worth. Third is identified regulation. It's a conscious valuing of a goal or regulation and accepting the action and owning it personally. Fourth is integrated regulation. It's the regulations when fully assimilated to the self. It's still, however, done to attain some separate outcomes. Studies show the more students were externally regulated, the less they showed interest, value, and effort toward achievement, and the more they tended to disown responsibility of negative outcomes, therefore blaming others such as teachers, versus the identified regulation was associated with more interest and enjoyment of school, more positive coping skills. So how can we be supportive of the integration and internalization? Since many of these activities are because they have to and not really interesting to the person, relatedness, which is the need to feel belongingness and connectedness, is important for internalization. And also that competence should facilitate internalization. For if one is not ready developmentally to do a skill, then at best they can only be externally or introjected regulated. The experience of autonomy facilitates internalization and is important for integration. It allows individuals to actively transform values into their own. For our learners, it is imperative to gain knowledge of their current competency level so as not to thwart their growth by putting them in an experience which is externally regulated or being done merely because we tell them to. This allows us to set the optimal level of challenge and provide the support and feedback to meet those challenges. We also need to make certain to also try to enhance relatedness, as this will help with the resident or fellow wanting to do the task, as they will have a sense of belonging. This could be done by enhanced interactions among the operating room staff, floor nurses, clinic nurses, or whatever environment the resident or fellow is in at that current time. Additionally, find connections with what you're doing that day to a resident's future or share personal stories with them. Promote resident or fellow autonomy by considering their perspectives, providing them choices, or providing meaningful rationale when choices cannot be offered. Minimizing controlling behavior works. Micromanaging a CA3 would not promote autonomy. Focus on goals that fulfill the basic psychological needs, realizing that cultural and developmental influences produce variations in the importance of goals. In the paper by Richard Ryan, it stated, "We found that conditions supportive of autonomy and competence reliably facilitated this vital expression of the human growth tendency, whereas conditions that controlled behavior and hindered perceived affectance undermined its expression. The failure to provide support for competence, autonomy, and relatedness contributes to alienation and ill-being." How can we relate all of this to improve our teaching style and foster growth of the resident or fellow? Hopefully, this will allow you to reflect on your own teaching style and interactions with the residents and fellows. I know personally, this new information makes me rethink many interactions I have had with residents and fellows, but also reflect upon interactions I experienced as a resident and fellow. My favorite experiences as a resident and fellow were with attendees that were interested in the case, interested in me as a person, and were fun to be around. For a visual of the self-determination continuum showing types of motivation, please refer to the figure 1 in the attached article by Ryan et al. And for more in-depth coverage and application on the topic, consider attending the SCA workshop on teaching.